Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
So we are currently dialing the Technodrome, and hopefully someone will answer.
Hello, you have reached the Technodrome. Please consider leaving your name and number on the floor because I don't want to talk to you.
Don't hang up, Steve, Mike. It's Pat. How are you guys doing?
Oh, good, how are man. You? That's awesome.
Now, Mike, you're in Louisville?
Yeah.
And Steve in Detroit?
Yeah. He's in
the Detroit area. He's not actually in the city.
Yeah, well, nobody lives in the city. It's all Detroit area.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Hey, where are you guys? Like, are you in a basement or in your house? Or where are you? Let me give me a picture of where you are. Mike.
Well, I'm in a one-bedroom apartment, living room, kitchen combination, I guess you could say. I've got a 6-foot by 9-foot desk. It's huge. It's essentially a command center. Technodrome.
Yeah, when you live in a one-bedroom apartment, that cuts down the possibilities. So we know exactly where you are. Steve?
I'm currently located in the basement of my two-bedroom townhouse.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's a good place for you.
Yeah, hovering in the dark over my desk.
Well, I'm here in Hollywood. I never thought I'd be the guy to live in Hollywood, but I actually live next to the Hollywood Bowl, and I'm outside in the garden. I turned off the fountain, and it's crystal clear. It was about 80 today. And it's a fun place to live. I grew up in Seattle, so it's still. I wake up in Hollywood and go, "Wow, there's palm trees out there."
Yes.
So,
for those of you who are just tuning in and don't know, we are here on Geekcast Radio. I am TF2 and Mike, along with Steve Megatron, and we are talking with the incomparable Pat Fraley, who voiced Krang in the 1987 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He also voiced Denver the Last Dinosaur, Ace from G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, and a bunch of other places and people and characters and everything else. What's been going on with you, sir? What's give people some insight on what you've got going on these days.
Well, I just got back from New York where I taught, and I teach a lot. I go around the country, or actually North America, and I teach on the weekends. I've always taught my whole career, which will be about 40 years next year. And then as far as voiceover work, I just saw on TV that something I recently did, it's, I don't know what the name of it, it's a Harvey Weinstein film about the taking down of bin Laden. And I did the voice of the Secretary of Defense on that. And then tomorrow I do a cartoon, a narration in a kind of French old man voice. Once upon a time, there was a little artiste. So I'm going to do that tomorrow. And a lot of what I do these days are little roles in really good movies. Whereas in the 80s and 90s, I was the lead in really bad TV. So it sort of switched around. I kind of feel like Alec Guinness, the British actor who said, one becomes knighted in England, so one can go to Hollywood and play butlers. But that's sort of what happens.
Or Jedi Masters.
Old. What?
Or Jedi Masters.
That's right. So it's a good trade-off, really. Less lines, good money, great movies, and that's what happens when you get old. They only need one grumpy general to tell all the other soldiers to go out and die. That's me. Are
Very
you shocked?
Awesome. No. Well, yeah, yes, we are. But that's funny. The old grumpy general. Wow.
Yeah. See all the other actors that play in the interactive games complain about having to scream when they die a lot and it hurts their throat. The good news about a grumpy general is he goes, "All right, man, I want you to go out there. Heart attack." That's all you have to do.
That's awesome. So tell us the story of how you broke into the business.
Well, you know, it was more like less breaking than preparing and slowly getting in there. What I did is I'm doing now the same thing I did when I was 4 years old. I can't remember a time when I wasn't doing characters and making silly noises, learning how to talk backwards at recess. And then when I went through high school and college for 6 years and studied acting and doing characters, went to Australia and started my career as an actor and also as a teacher, because I taught my whole career. And then I came to Los Angeles. I'd met a guy actually on vacation in Tahiti, and he was a producer for Hanna-Barbera, Don Jurwich. And he said, "Well, if you come to Los Angeles, I'll listen to your demo." So I did. I went, but I'd saved my money before I came so I could be here. And I wouldn't have a day job, so I could, you know, if some actors or a producer say, "Hey, would you like to go to dinner or something like, or lunch?" I'd say, "Yeah, sure." So I did that. It took me about 3 years of doing that and getting to know people. And then I started working in cartoons. The roles I had were doing the villains on Scooby-Doo.
Oh, wow.
And so it really is a that's my little Boston Terrier. He's barking upstairs on the balcony. It's okay. It's only me. So it really is, guys, it's a story of, like, they always say, it's who you know. Well, mm-hmm. It's who you get to know. But when they say, "Can you do this?" you say yes, and you're ready.
Yeah.
You know, Woody Allen said 85% of success is being there. And so I put myself in a position of being skilled and being there and had enough money to get through until I started working. And, of course, that's where you're out of control is who hires you. But I was ready.
Cool.
Yes.
Very cool. We're going to talk about your Disney career, because I had no idea you had a Disney career.
Yeah, Disney's been a big part. And by the way, this is kind of interesting. Career means that you got hired for the same kind of job over and over again. But there's no word in the Bible for career. There's a word for job and skills or craft. And so careers, I never look at it as a career. I got hired over and over again doing certain things. But I just think that's interesting, because a lot of people get a lot of pressure on themselves by going, oh, no, my career isn't going anywhere. Hey, it's just job after job. You know, it's
I'll
not
rephrase, the Disney portion of your acting career there. Is that better?
Hey, I wasn't admonishing you. Disney, I started doing cartoons for Disney when they entered the market in the 80s. I jumped in the 90s doing Tailspin. And I did a character called Wildcat, who was the ignorant but lovable mountain lion, Baloo's buddy. And they were having a hard time casting it because he looks dumb. So everyone was coming in and playing him dumb. And I thought, well, maybe he's not dumb. Maybe he's naive. And so I auditioned for it, playing a character that sounded like, Baloo, is this a wrench or a banana? I forget. And, oh, look, there's a new island on the map. Oh, no, it's guacamole. So he was kind of delightful and light and stuff. And then I started to, I did a few more projects for Disney. And then I landed the sound alike, the sound match for Tim Allen's Buzz Lightyear. And To Infinity and Residuals. It turned out that Tim was so busy with his series and his great career that he couldn't do a lot of the toys, the rides at Disney, the interactive games, and stuff. And so I was the sound alike. Well, that was a good ride for about 9 years. I did a lot of work for Disney there. And then as I did, I got to know John Lasseter at Pixar, because in Toy Story 2, I actually did part of the Buzz Lightyear role, because Tim Allen didn't like doing exertion sounds, and he would be silly. So they hired me to go in and do part of that role. And then they started hiring me on doing other roles, Monsters, Inc., Chicken Little, and also Disney started hiring me doing roles on, like, Tangled. And so that's been a real good relationship.
Very cool. Very cool. Do you have a favorite voice from all your various Disney roles?
I think Wildcat. I liked it. And I'll tell you why. I mean, this was 20 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What happened to me was I started getting notes and calls and stuff from kids that watched it that are about 21 or 22 years old. And a lot of them they're autistic or have Asperger's or some kind of difficulties. And I've been in touch with them. In fact, I even this summer went to a graduation backyard party for one of my students who really loved Tailspin. Also, I did a role called Lurky in Rainbow Bright. And he was kind of like that, too. Whoa, what a wonderful day in Rainbow Land. So he was kind of silly and in some ways challenged. But see, what happened was these kids would be going to school in public schools where they have resources to help people with the mentally challenged kids. And they'd come back and they'd be, of course, brutalized in school. You know, the kids would tease them. Now, they come back home and after school they watch a cartoon and they watch characters who are challenged or different. And all the other characters in that show love them. And so they really identified with that, and it gave them a respite from their life. And so it really had a great deal of meaning for them. And so how good is that for me? I mean, here I'm just doing this silly voice, and it means something that really is important for some kids.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So that's part of it. I love it. But, you know, what I do is amusement. And amuse in Greek means not think. So I'm in the not thinking business. But how wonderful is it when you give somebody that's challenged and a respite from that, and they can identify? Yeah, that puts import into a life that otherwise would be just about entertainment and amusement and silliness.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a real reason I love that character and other characters I did that were very silly and kind of naive and goofy.
We're going to talk about when you were Ace on G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
I think I can't remember to tell you the truth, but I probably auditioned for it. And it was really me just being a little smart alecky, a little cool. Hey, Ace, the fly guy. You know, I know about pilots because my father was a bomber pilot in World War II. And they're pretty cool and, you know, they're kind of a little slick. And so I just took that kind of feel for it and auditioned for it and did it. And we didn't know that it would be so popular, but... you know, it was a wonderful thing. Let me go back to that doing naive characters and characters are a little challenged. I grew up around the deaf because my grandfather taught the deaf and blind in state schools in North Dakota and in Idaho. Well, I grew up around these kids. And so I didn't know it, but that's sort of what I brought to the role. At the time, I honestly didn't know it. I just thought, well, he's naive and he'll sound like this, you know. And the same thing with Ace. My dad was a flyer. When he was a young man, he was pretty cocky. He, you know, they'd, you know, hang one on and get drunk, and then they'd have to take a B-52 up to Colorado from Texas, and so they'd suck oxygen up their tank and pull hairs on their legs to keep awake. You know, just wild young kid guys. And so that's what I brought to the party to Ace. And all of what I do and what I, you know, the people that I knew best, Jim Cummings and Rob Paulson, some of the really luminaries in voiceover, there's always something they bring to the party from their experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's sort of the inside track into the way I've created characters and the way I know other people create them is that there's something about their own life and their own experience they bring to it. For example, you remember the old school character, Huckleberry Hound. Hello, how you doing?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, by Dawes Butler. Well, he was doing his brother-in-law from North Carolina.
Oh, that's funny.
That was an impression of his brother-in-law.
Yeah, that's so cool how just people you know or influences have a lot to do with the characters that we know and love.
Yeah, you know, it's like we've been rehearsing all our lives, so why not use it?
Yeah.
I've made so much money doing an impression of my brother as a smart aleck. I'm not very cynical, but my brother's like the king of cynical. So when they say, well, we want this character cynical, I just do an impression of my brother.
That's awesome.
That is. So we're going to jump into some Turtles talk.
Okay.
What was it like coming up with the character of Krang or during the... audition process?
Well, it was kind of interesting, guys, because I was a replacement for the director who had cast himself as Krang and about three other characters, which is way too many to do in the show when back in the day we didn't have guests. So he had cast himself in it, and the producer wanted to recast it. And so Fred Wolf said, okay, you got 2 minutes, come up with something. And I read the description. First of all, you got to know this. I read the titles, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Oh, this is not going to go anywhere. Right? So yeah. It says, you know, Krang, a burbling, chortling, disgusting blob of an evil villain, but funny. And I thought, well, I don't have anything I have, you know, I can pull from other shows I've done. So I thought about how I have, as a teacher, broken down the character voice into different elements. For example, pitch characteristic, tempo, rhythm, placement, and mouth work. Six elements to a character. So I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll assign a character trait to each of those elements. And Fred said, okay, we're gonna roll in 2 minutes. So I thought, oh, boy, I better be fast. So I thought, pitch. Well, I'll give him quite a bit of a pitch, right? So he can go very up and very down, and he can go all over the place. So he can be villainous. Then I thought, pitch characteristic. Well, I'll give him kind of a cottony kind of pitch characteristic, as he is a brain of a little chortly character. Then I thought, tempo. Well, I'll vary it. So he can be very fast and very slow, and he can have a lot of room to move, and that'll add to the villainous part. Then I got to a rhythm. Well, I'll give him kind of a staggering with him because he's a blob, so he's undulating, sort of like Katharine Hepburn, you know. And so he had that kind of thing going. And then I thought, mouth work. Well, I'll make him puffy, and I'll place him in the back of my throat for placement, and then he's got to be disgusting, so I'll add some disgusting sounds, and I'll all burp every so often. Then I thought, oh, they'll never let me burp between the lines. Things go very fast. They don't want anything slowed down. How about I do the trick I learned on the at recess in third grade, and that's how to talk backwards, where you bring in air rather than expel it. So instead of saying hi, you go, hi. And so it was time to audition, and I just went, well, I'm just hoping this and praying this works, and so that, wow, so you're surrounded by idiots. This is what I get. How would you like to be boiled in oil with just a touch of cilantro?
Wow. That is so cool.
So it was pretty, in my experience, it was a pretty unique voice because of, you know, never done, who's done a character like that? You know, it's so weird. And, you know, people, I read online, people, oh, I like your Krang better than somebody else's that took it over. Because it's been there's about two generations of performers that have done it. And I say, look, you know, they have to imitate this weird thing I came up with. Come on, cut them a little slack. It's tough. I mean, I barely came up with it, let alone them having to imitate me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you audition for any other roles on Turtles, or was it just Krang?
No, actually, that was it. And then when I got there, Fred said, you're doing Baxter Stockman, Vernon, and Vern Thompson as well. Because he was very, cheap. He didn't want any, you know, guests on the show. So I think there were eight of us when you count out everybody that was in the cast. And we were there every show, and we had to cover every character. And so I said, look, I can do Vern Thompson, go, Vernon, you know, that guy. And Casey, hello, Violator. I knew I could do those. And Baxter Stockman, who came into the show and disappeared. But I said, I can't do Vernon. Which was such a great thing because Pete Renaday took it over and did such a wonderful job. In fact, I got to tell you guys, in all the sessions I recall, the one character we all laughed at and broke up on and they have to do retakes on was Vernon that he did. Because Vernon was so scared of everything. And he killed us. And he didn't kill us with ad-libs. Now, Rob Paulson and I love improv and ad-libbing. So we ad-libbed more than any of the other cast members. And we'd get in trouble, and they liked it, and they would not let us do one and all that stuff. But we sat together for 9 years, and we just loved. In fact, we used to give each other ad-libs for characters, because Rob did Raphael, and I did Krang. Now, we very rarely had scenes together, but I would hand him a slip of paper saying, oh, for an ad-lib based on his line that was better than the written line and vice versa. And that sort of started a relationship, and we did Bobby's World together that way and other shows because we loved, you know, pulling it off the page and coming up with something funnier. I didn't audition for other roles. They were just given to me. But I turned down one key one. It was very good, and it was very smart now that I look back. And I've done all my careers. Don't take everything. Turn down auditions. Turn down roles because you never want to have anybody hear or see you not doing your best. And if you figure somebody else can do it, let them do it.
Right, right.
So I know you personally talked about it, but what were some of the voice sessions like? Like, were there a lot of goofy moments in it? Or?
Oh, yeah. Especially, are you talking about Ninja Turtles or any sessions?
Ninja Turtles specifically, but any session if you have any story from any other ones. But yeah, Ninja Turtles.
Well, you know, it was such a delight because we had all of the players there. We're all in a room. We're there in the room once a week for 9 years. I mean, that's unheard of. Even in on-camera TV shows and stuff, to go to 9 years and also to be in the same room together. So it wasn't like, you know, there would be a scene with sitcom and you weren't in it. But no, we were all there every time. And the first year, we didn't know what we had, and so the producers gave us a lot of room to ad-lib. Because they didn't know. If we came up with a funnier line, it went in the show. The second year, after it became this huge success, then they were more picky. And we'd have to beg them we'd do three ad-libs, and they'd only let us use one of them. Sort of, it became like union arbitration. But it was just a joy because, you know, you get so close to people in show business. It's very weird. You know, you watch The Letterman Show or Jay Leno, and you see these people come on stage and they're kissing each other and hugging. Well, it's so unusual that people get to work together or even work, that people bond very quickly. So here we have 9 years. People say, well, I mean, during that time, Barry Gordon went through a law school. Here he was Donatello, and he went to law school. No, wait. Yeah, I think it was Donatello.
Yeah, no. Barry was Donatello.
Yeah, and Renee Jacobs was running a really successful medical business with her husband. And, you know, I had 4 boys in 5 years during that time. And so we had these huge lives, but we were all together, and it was a joy and very silly. You know, the important part of an ensemble session when you're doing comedy, you got to keep that energy up. So when we'd be recording and they'd stop and the director would give notes, we'd be being silly the whole time to keep that energy going. So it was a delight, as it was during that era. Even today when I do a show, it's a delight to be there with all these wonderful, skillful actors. Because remember, it doesn't matter how you look in voiceover. It's all about the skills. So there's nobody in the room that doesn't have the skills. So it's the highest skill level of any performance medium I know of. Nobody gets in there on their looks.
Yeah, and not every person makes $1 million.
Right.
Mm.
Right. Now let me ask you a question about that. What do you mean by that?
Oh, you didn't hear a couple, was it last year?
It was last year.
Last year, Chris Rock made a comment that he gets $1 million per voice job or certain voice jobs. And it tore the internet into an uproar.
Oh yeah. You know, come on, he's doing comedy. Yeah. Everyone knows that's, you know, yeah. You know, yeah. He was just, because Chris Rock, when he works and he's wonderful, he does his own voice. And so, and he's a star. So that, good on him to get a lot. No, you know, a lot of us decided to be, rather than racehorses, decided to be Clydesdales. In other words, we're out there plowing the field day by day. And, you know, somebody asked me once, well, what was the contract like for Ninja Turtles? And I said, well, I did 200 shows. I signed 200 contracts. We were day players. We never had a weekly contract or a deal. It pretty much is a day rate. Now, what you do is you get residuals on it, and we all did really well in that area. I mean, I don't know if we all made $1 million, but close to it on the whole series, but not on one job. But that's the nature of the business, you know. But I think it's great that stars are involved with animation because when they're not available, as Tim Allen wasn't for me doing Buzz Lightyear, I made a wonderful living having his back and doing his voice when he wasn't. And also, for every hit movie, there's 3 of them that come along afterwards, and we get hired for them. So, and it also inspires the animators. You know, they get Tom Hanks in a role, and they can see him in their mind. And finally, it helps raise money. You know, you ever wonder why they have a star like Whoopi Goldberg in a movie, and no kids know who Whoopi Goldberg is, but it helps them get money. and get that movie produced. So I think having stars is a win-win situation. And with Pixar and Disney, they cast so well that they do really well.
Oh, yeah.
There's exceptions like Brad Pitt and something like Treasure Planet. But that happens. It happens a lot more on camera where they're miscast than in animation.
Oh, yeah.
Most definitely. What are the other voice actors that influence you, or what are the other voice actors maybe growing up that you kind of looked up to, or like a lot of us, at least, because I'm 33, Steve is 26, I think. Yeah, I don't remember. You know, I'm 33. I grew up watching all the old reruns of the Scooby stuff, of the old Hanna-Barbera stuff and everything else. And back then, I didn't know, you know, that it was Dawes Butler and Don. I didn't know the names. I didn't know the names behind the voice. I just knew I liked that voice. So, what about you? What voice actors or actors in general influence you as far as your career and your aspirations?
Well, first of all, let me address this. I didn't know what their names are, and to this day, I don't think we should know what their names are. I mean, you see an animated character, and you don't want to. It's like a puppeteer. You don't want to know who the puppeteer is. You just want to know that puppet. You know, who cares if somebody does Elmo? I'm interested in Elmo. So in animation, I think it's the same thing. I love that the idea that we aren't known. We're just a support craft for that animation. And when I was a boy, I'm 63. So in 1957, Hanna-Barbera started creating cartoons for kids on TV with the Rough and Ready show. And a lot of those early ones, Huckleberry Hound, Yogi Bear, those things were done by two men, Don Messick and Dawes Butler. Now, I didn't know who they were, and I didn't know they even did all the voices on shows, but I loved all that. But bear in mind, guys, I didn't think of doing cartoons until somebody said, oh, you're good at doing that, you know, big characters. And that was years later. I just like to perform characters. In fact, when I'm in front of the mic, I still think, Jim Cummings put it best. He's a voiceover talent, a wonderful voiceover talent. He says, we don't do voices. We do characters that happen to have interesting voices.
True.
So when you see us recording, we're all over the place. We just can't run around the room because we have that mic. But other than that, Katie, bar the door. It's big performances. And so when you get now, getting back to your question, my big influences came when I was in college and when I was at Cornell getting an MFA in acting, Master of Fine Arts in Acting. And they made us listen, not watch, performances. They knew it was important for us to listen to it and put it in our ear. And I listened to a comedian called Lord Buckley, Richard Buckley, in the 50s, who was wild. And that was interesting. Also, Charles Laughton, the famous actor in all the black and white movies, that inspired me. I was also inspired by a performer called Ruth Draper, who was used to go on stage in Broadway, and she'd play multiple female characters in monologues or just alone on stage. Those things were really inspiring to me. And somehow they just kind of came into me, and, you know, I guess the creative process is a finely honed endeavor of plagiarism, because I took stuff from all of them and sort of mixed it up, and out came what I do.
Very cool.
No,
you know, and really, I became a character voice actor because I was, in a sense, a failed repertory or theater actor. I was okay, you know. I was good at French farce, but when it came to Chekhov, man, the pilot light went off. I was okay, but I've always been exaggerated. As I mentioned, I grew up around the deaf, and so, you know, more is not enough for the deaf as far as expression. And so I was always more comfortable being big. And so I was in Australia. Somebody called the theater and said, do you have anybody that can do a Jimmy Cagney accent or impression? And they said, oh, yeah, we got a Yank in the company because they all think we do impressions, you know, Americans. So I go down to the studio. I do it. And as I'm leaving, somebody goes, oh, we like you. And I go, why? And they go, oh, because you're so big. We can't get the other actors to be that big. And I thought, wow, here they've been busting me for a couple, 3 or 4 years in school about being too exaggerated. And here's somebody that loves it. And so I thought, well, there's my career. I'll just embrace the fact I'm big and find where they need big.
Awesome. Now, as far as I've noticed that you do voice coaching, which is very interesting to me because I myself am striving to get into the voiceover business. I've been doing a lot of fan projects and a lot of various audio projects for years, but so how did you get in, start doing the voice coaching, and how's that?
Well, I talked, is this Steve?
Yes.
Good. 50-50% chance. And I got it right. Okay. Steve, I was teaching in high school. I taught, you know, the sophomores when I was a senior in college. When I was a senior, I taught the freshmen. When I got over and I started my career in Australia, someone called the theater and said, who teaches vocal dynamics? And I said, I'll do it. And so it's always been a mix of what I've done, and which is a little unusual. But and also, I got to tell you, I've had the best teachers of my life who can't act, and wonderful actors I know who can't teach. But God gifted me with the ability to do both. And in early on in my career, because you can't teach without deconstructing or breaking down the aspects of what you teach. Well, I love that too. I have an analytical side of my mind, and also a silly side. So I have those two things, and so that's how it's always been part of what I was. And going back to being, you know, too big for theater and too big for film and TV. You'll find that the most dynamic part of you is brought up in your youth in a disparaging way. In other words, when I was a kid, they said, oh, you're a know-it-all and a show-off. And I turn out to be a teacher and a performer. It turns out those are good things when you're a teacher and performer. And so that was my journey. I just always had it with me. And I never could give up one for the other. I love both. And to this day, you know, it's always been different. Sometimes I was performing so much I could barely teach. And now I'm teaching so much I barely can perform. But I love it all. I love both those. Because both of them are a way, for me, of hiding. You know, as a character, they don't know who I am. And I get to do a funny character. And I can do anything I want. They don't know who I am. In teaching, I can live through my students. For example, I've got a student, Nancy Cartwright, that I teach, and she does The Simpsons. She plays Bart, as if you didn't
know.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. We definitely know her.
Right. Well, what delights me is I watch the show, and I can hear my influence on her. How cool is that?
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's sort of how I got into teaching.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, how much teaching do you do per year? You said you're doing more teaching now than actual, you know, voice jobs, but like how is it even, or is it like 70-30, 80-20? How much of each do you do per year now?
Well, you know, as far as time goes, I suppose that teaching would be like more like 70-30. As far as money goes, I do a small job on a movie, and then I get residuals. It's huge, you know. It's hard to deal with it. Here's basically how it works. On the weekends, I fly to New York, Chicago, Canada, all over San Francisco, Dallas, and I teach. And then during the week, I'm home to take a little job and have a life, and that all works out. So that's sort of how it goes these days. But I mainly teach on the weekends, and I like to fly in, and I teach people and enjoy that time and come back, and then I'm back in town for auditions and for jobs doing small roles on movies and stuff like I'm doing lately.
Very cool. Very cool. Would you Would you ever want to, or would you ever audition for any new TMNT stuff, or have you already auditioned for TMNT stuff that's currently going on?
I'm always up for. I have auditioned for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles stuff. No, wait, I'm trying to think. Yeah, the stuff that the second generation, when they call for a character's extra or whatever. But, you know, it's a new generation, a new culture. Now, Rob is playing a turtle on the new series of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles because Rob has this light tenor voice, and he can play young. To me, I mean, I've gone down in my years, and I'm almost a bass, which often happens. It happens to opera singers and voiceover guys. So, you know, I can't do, you know, a teenager. I sound like a teenager with a mortgage. Hi, Dad, can I have the keys to the car? It's not going to happen, right? And so I do. Yeah, I have no problem with it, and I think it's wonderful. But I think it's wonderful because, you know, popular culture changes. And, you know, whereas you are nostalgic and many of your listeners nostalgic about things you grew up with, as I am, thinking about Rough and Ready, Huckleberry Hound, Yogi Bear, people, there's new kids watching, new kids sitting Indian style in front of the TV with a Fruit Loop stuck to their forehead, enjoying a new presentation character. So I have no problem with it. And yeah, I'd audition in a minute for stuff. But I don't feel bad when there's a new Krang. I mean, it's really, and I love the fact that they, in between you and me, and of course, you know, thousands of people, but I love the idea that somebody else is imitating my voice because some producer said, well, that was so good, we're not going to change it. We want you to sound like that. So there's a legacy involved. I love that.
Right, yeah. And while I personally might be nostalgic for all the stuff that I grew up with, I still love, between the new Transformers Prime cartoon and the new Nickelodeon Turtles cartoon, I love those two shows. Those shows are just amazing what they're doing. Sure, it's not what I grew up with. Sure, it's a different iteration, but I've grown to accept different iterations unless they just don't appeal to me. But
right.
I honestly think that it's one of those things where, because, and it's not just because, but it's mainly because of the fact that Rob is back. But Rob is doing Donnie this time instead of Raph. But the dynamic of that cast and what that show is going to do is just, it's just amazing to me. And I can surely embrace that just as I embraced the 87 version as a 7-year-old, you know. So.
Yeah, you know, that's the way to go, because when you think about it and you look back on shows, the animation was not as good, definitely, in the 80s and 90s. It was not as good as it is now. Things are much better. The recordings, the performances, things have gotten better all the way around. And so, yeah, I have a heart for nostalgia, but I also think things are so much better now. And so it's a good balance. And if they get it right, the show, and the writing's better now. The writing is better. So everything is better. Back in the day, the writers weren't in the power structure, so they weren't paid as much. And so they really leaned on the actors to make the scripts better. But now the writers are better, and the shows are tighter. And because of, you know, the advent of digital recording, digital editing, everything is cleaner and works better. Because, boy, when I started, if you watch those Scooby-Doo shows in the late 70s when I started, they're like a slideshow. They really were funky. It was funky animation. But when you get down to, but speaking of funky animation and cartoons, when you look at The Simpsons, the animation is very modest. It's that writing and that performing. Because, you know, with the exception of anime, we go in there and we do our performance, and those animators, it has to be evocative, and those animators are stuck with what we do. So it really has to be evocative for them. And that's what I've always been pleased about being a voiceover guy, is that we really guide it. We're the ones that set how good a show will be.
Yeah, very, very awesome. All right. Would you like to inform any of the fans or the listeners where they might be able to interact with you online? Or I know you're on Facebook, but I don't know if you keep that as kind of like your personal page, or do you do Twitter at all?
No, I don't do Twitter. I will be doing it, but, you know, I sat next to somebody on a plane, and they said, Facebook is the company picnic. And so I try to keep things light. But right. Where they can go, and this is why I would suggest it, if they go to patfraley.com, they'll click on the free menu. There's a free. There's a whole volley of free lessons, video and audio that I prepared so people can enjoy stuff without putting out money.
Awesome.
And so awesome. For anybody going, oh, I kind of find this interesting, go there and listen to a bunch of them. Find a section on character voice or on audio books or on just techniques and tricks and enjoy. And if they want stuff, they can go, they'll be guided to another place where they can buy stuff. But enjoy stuff for free.
Very
That's
cool.
patfraley.com.
Yeah, we'll put a link in our post so people can be sure to go over there. Before we let you go, remind everyone what you have coming up or what people can either see or hear you in, whether it's animation or TV or whichever.
Gosh, you know, a lot of stuff. I just did Spielberg's Lincoln. The movie's coming out. I don't know the title of the Harvey Weinstein film. It's coming out a couple days before the election on the taking down of bin Laden. But, I did recently Puss in Boots, Tangled, The Muppet Movie, Happy Feet 2. You know, the main thing is, they can always check what I've done on somewhere. But, you know, the good news about me is, I'm in there. They'll hear it somehow, and it allows me to walk down to the grocery store without doing a handshaking tour.
Very awesome. We would like to thank Mr. Fraley for taking the time to chat with us here in this special GeekCast radio interview that is a part of our week-long celebration of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We'll ask you to hold the line, and we'll be back after this.
Shocking! Don't! There's no telling what might come through that porthole! Ready? I want to talk to you.
What is it this time?
Why are you wasting time building mouse traps when you have yet to provide me with a body?
My problem is more urgent. Hamato Yoshi and his accursed turtles will ruin us if they're not...
There would be no problem if I had a body.
This is my fight. I must have the honor of destroying them.
Saki, come back here! Twice those turtles defeated you, Saki. I hope you fail again. And again, and keep failing until at last you have no choice but to give me a body!
There you go, folks. That was our conversation with Mr. Pat Fraley, voice of Krang, Denver the Last Dinosaur, and everything else he's done. That was pretty damn cool.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. This will kick off TMNT Week as far as the interviews. We're hoping to get more. We'll have to wait and see if it happens or not. I'm going to be putting my internet ear to the grindstone, and I'm going to be sending out a bunch of emails and everything else. But no, it was really interesting to hear his story and hear how the fact that he wanted to be an actor since he was four, and he liked doing it. Was more so about characters than it was about the actual acting. I know he's an actor. I'm not trying to insult him here, but most of his conversation was creating characters, and that's just amazing that he can do that.
Oh yeah, and I have noticed with various audio recordings he's done or podcasts for like voices.com, for instance, that he does have a knack and an ear for whether it be accents, audiobooks, demos, different pitches, layers, and everything to the characters. Just like how he broke down Krang in this interview,
yeah.
the guy knows his stuff in and out. Like, it's definitely helped put perspective to what I try to do. I'm nowhere near that good, obviously, but it gives me a picture of what I have to get to.
Right.
Yeah, it was simply cool listening to him explain all that.
Yeah, it was very awesome. So there you go, folks. That's our interview with Mr. Pat Fraley. We will hopefully get more interviews here on GCR for TMNT Week. And I guess unleash the geek in you, and we will see you later.
Whoa! I've heard him going out of your skull, but you take the cake!
Listen to me. The room with the master control is one flight up. Go there and destroy it.
Wait a minute. Why should I believe a talking brain?
There's no time to argue. Your friends are in danger. Hurry.
My lord, what has happened to your body?
It's a long story. I lost it when they banished me to this miserable mud bowl.
Those three youths just blasted their way right out of my technodrome.
The neutrinos have eluded us!
Neutrinos? Running loose here on Earth? Saki, you imbecile!
What did I do? Who are these neutrinos?
A gang of juvenile delinquents from Dimension X. They're a threat to everything we stand for.
They hate war.
They refuse to join any army.
And what's worse, they encourage people to have fun.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.